Hello, everybody. This is Grant Podalko, and you're listening to The Blender, the weekly podcast from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. In this week's show, episode number 25, Lucian Stefanescu, in his Ear to the Ground music segment, introduces us to Nino Katamadze and Insight, who combine jazz, Georgian folk, psychedelia, and punk rock into a very pleasing mix. We discuss the fallout from the rather, shall I say, ill-informed comments made about Serbia by late-night U.S. TV talk show host Chelsea Handler.
The Serbian Defense Minister, Dragan Sutanovac, said on his Facebook page, Amy's concert was a shame and a huge disappointment. Well, so is your country.
And I talked to author, editor, and photographer Frederick Chauban about his decade-long quest to document the stunning, strange, and largely forgotten Soviet architecture from the 1970s and 1980s.
The shapes are crazy. They are just, at least for some of the buildings, they look like science fiction sets.
But first to Central Asia. Many people believe that some of the most valuable lessons in life are the ones you learn on the playground. In southern Kyrgyzstan, still recovering from deadly ethnic clashes last year, one local kindergarten says it's working hard to teach its diverse group of students about tolerance and friendship. Daisy Sindelar reports from Osh.
It's nearly noon at Osh's kindergarten number 30, and students are enjoying a last few minutes on the playground before heading inside for lunch and a nap. As they run and jostle each other, you can hear a jumble of different languages, Kyrgyz, Uzbek, Russian, and occasionally even Tatar. Teachers say many of the children are so fluent they can slip from one language into another without even realizing it. They are so comfortable with the mix, in fact, that some can't even identify what their primary language is. Others say that they speak only Russian, only to be reminded by their teacher that they also speak Uzbek or Kyrgyz. School staff say their multilingual young charges are a reflection of the city's diversity. Osh has long been home to Kyrgyz, Uzbeks, Tatars, Russians, Koreans, and Turks, among others. But last year's deadly clashes between Uzbeks and Kyrgyz have cast a shadow over the city's colorful population. Some 470 people are believed to have died in the June 2010 violence. Now Uzbeks, complaining of hostility from Kyrgyz authorities, are retreating into their local communities or leaving Kyrgyzstan altogether. But Salamat Ashimbayeva, the director of kindergarten number 30, says her school is trying to help preserve the city's ethnic mix.
In my kindergarten, for example, we have six groups and six teachers. Of the six, four are Uzbek, one is Russian, and one is Kyrgyz. And the assistants, for the most part, are Uzbek.
The kindergarten is located on Osh's central Lenin Street, just a few blocks from the site where the June clashes first erupted. But Ashimbayeva says the school never stopped working, even during the worst of the violence. And a year later, she says, none of the parents, Uzbek or Kyrgyz or otherwise, have pulled their children out of the school. That may be due in part to efforts by teachers like Mamlakat Khalberdieva. In the early days after the clashes, she says she noticed the Kyrgyz and Uzbek children withdrawing into separate groups. Khalberdieva broke up the segregation, forcing her students to mix with each other, and she's tried to do the same with the parents as well.
We have good relations with all the parents. They understand the situation. They understand the influence they have on their children. We have good ties with them, and they with us. We try to understand each other.
Despite its pride in its diverse mix of students, the school offers no instruction in Uzbek, only Russian, with a little Kyrgyz thrown in. It's a sore point for the city's Uzbeks, who saw many of their own Uzbek language schools torched in the clashes. Only a handful of Uzbek schools remain, and teaching materials in Uzbek are scarce. For some, the situation has underscored the importance of the Russian language as a neutral lingua franca that can keep the two sides talking. But Russian's future is uncertain as well. Russian is currently the dominant language of instruction in many schools in Kyrgyzstan. But President Roza Atunbayeva wants to promote the status of the Kyrgyz language and is looking at schools as a good place to start. It's a move that may further frustrate the country's already isolated Uzbek population, leaving some to wonder if the playground at kindergarten number 30 and others like it will soon lose their colorful mix of children and languages.
That was Daisy Sindelar reporting from Osh on one kindergarten's efforts to keep its pupils talking and playing together. To see pictures from kindergarten number 30 and other scenes from Osh, visit our website at rferl.org.
Говорить радіо Свобода.
Радіо Фарда гуш мікані.
Машал радіо Дамілі
Аваксун ДТМ.
Радіо Аваксун. 28 languages, 21 countries, one voice. Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty.
A month ago, we debuted the first installment of what we hoped would become a regular music segment on The Blender. It was called Ear to the Ground, and it was hosted by Romanian journalist Lucian Stefanescu. Lucian promised to keep us up to date on the latest releases and tours by interesting bands with a connection to our broadcast region. Well, Lucian has graced us with a second installment, so it looks like our wish has come true.
Hi there, I am Lucian Stefanescu. Welcome to Ear to the Ground, the monthly musical section of RFERL's podcast, The Blender. Today we travel to Moscow, transported by Georgian music, then to Bucharest in search of the imaginary Russian, and this very imaginary Russian will finally guide us through Kurdish sounds in northern Iraq, mixed with Algerian, Indian, and Western beats from the third planet. It may be possible that many of our listeners usually associate Georgia and Russia with conflict, a long one and far from being completely solved. This is why they will probably be pleasantly surprised when they will listen to this.
11 июня в московському клубі А2 концерт Ніно Катамадзе і групи Inside. Волшебство из аккордов солнечного джаза, уникальный голос, притягательность и магия песен.
This, ladies and gentlemen, was a short fragment from a promo to a gig that famous Georgian vocalist and composer Nino Katamadze and her band, Inside, had in Moscow on June 11th. Jazz, Georgian folkloric music, psychedelic and punk, voice and vitality. Some people compare to those of Janis Joplin. Four albums, White, Black, Blue and Red. All these make of Nino Katamadze and Insight one of the most interesting musical groups in the era that was once known as USSR. We'll be right back. excellent musicians, Gocha Kacheishvili, guitar, David Abuladze, drums, Ucha Gugunava, bass, and all the thumbs up for the guy putting so nicely Nino and the boys into our ears, Georgi Chalidze, the sound engineer. We're now listening to the song Leo from the 2010 album called Red, Nino Katamadze, and Inside. The very same day Nino Katamadze and Inside played in Moscow, Bucharest, the capital of Romania, was visited by a very special musician.
Hello, I am Alexander Robotnik. Robotnik in Russian means worker. Alexander Robotnik, in my imagination, was a Russian refugee from Stalin in France. Of course, I'm a veteran. I crossed, I can't remember how many different seasons of music, starting from Beatles and Rolling Stone. But I still have fun, and that's important. I was 53. Someone sent me an email, did you still DJing? I never DJed in my life. And I answered, yes, I'm still DJing. So I started to DJing. It was 2003 and I was already 53.
Alexander Robotnik, also known as Maurizio Dami, speaking to VeozaArte.ro, an online platform for cultural avant-garde and experimental arts, created by two colleagues of mine, Andrea Onizza and Tania Cucoranu. Dami is an Italian music producer who became famous as the godfather of the so-called Italo Disco. That was in 1983. In 1996, Maurizio Dami, with Nazar Abdullah and Rashmi Bhatt, created The Third Planet, a multi-ethnic band that blends traditional music from Kurdistan, Algeria and India with modern sounds. They released two albums, Kurdistani and The Third Planet, and we are listening now to the song called Salam Salam. Salam Salam, a song by The Third Planet. My name is Lucian Stefanescu. Thank you for being with us. Stay tuned to The Blender, a podcast of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
Just a reminder that The Blender is the weekly podcast from Radio Free Europe. RFE brings radio, internet, and television news programming to 21 countries across the former Soviet Union, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, and the Balkans. If you'd like to get in touch, it's very, very easy. Drop us a line at podcast@rferl.org or leave a comment on the Blender section of our website. And remember, you can download episodes of The Blender from our website, or by subscribing on iTunes. A new episode is posted every Friday.
And now to the Balkans. Chelsea Handler, a popular TV talk show host and best-selling author in the United States, made some disparaging comments about Serbia during one of her recent broadcasts. It all began when she and some of her comedy cohorts took a few mean-spirited jabs at British singer Amy Winehouse. That was after a YouTube video surfaced of an incapacitated Winehouse trying to sing at a concert in the Serbian capital, Belgrade. But the insults weren't only directed at Amy Winehouse. Let's listen to what Chelsea Handler and her friends had to say.
Amy Winehouse spent the weekend getting booed in Serbia. She was performing in front of 20,000 fans. I can't believe 20,000 people buy tickets to see her perform. That's pretty impressive, especially when she's probably going to pass out during the show. This time, we have a little video. She didn't pass out, but she was clearly on heroin. Somebody is backstage with her, and they're like, go, you're ready. Go do it. Like,
well, clearly, Serbia. There's not a lot of rules over there.
I know. I can't believe they even allow Serbians to go to concerts. I didn't know that was going on over there.
I like how they're calling it a disaster in Serbia. This is a place that's had ethnic cleansing and genocide. And her concert was a bigger bummer than that.
Sorry.
So she's canceled the rest of the tour. So after Serbia, where was she going? Like Kazakhstan or something?
The Call Serbian December. Defense Minister, Dragan Sutanovac, said on his Facebook page, Amy's concert was a shame and a huge disappointment. Well, so is your country.
Dragan Sutanovac, isn't that the guy who beat up Rocky?
Yeah. Yes, he was.
Dragan is a very popular Bolshevik name.
These comments prompted Serbia's ambassador to the United States, Vladimir Petrovic, to write a letter to Handler's network chief calling the show, quote, inappropriate, distasteful, and just plain bad humor. Serbian Defense Minister Dragan Šutanovac, who attended the Winehouse concert, called Handler arrogant, shallow, and mean. A blog post about the scandal on RFERL's website has also generated dozens and dozens of reader comments. Everyone seems to agree Chelsea Handler is ignorant. Some question why the Serbian state would stoop so low as to comment on something as silly as an American TV show, while others say the Serbian officials are simply doing their duty and defending their country. To talk more about this crazy story, I'm joined in the studio by Gordana Knezevic, the director of Radio Free Europe's Balkan service. Welcome to the Blender, Gordana. What's the reaction on the street in Serbia to this story? Has anyone other than the ambassador and the defense minister noticed what Chelsea Handler had to say?
Definitely. Serbian media are just flooded by the stories related to this satirical show. And it's amazing that actually people took it seriously because Serbia is not a country where jokes are not told and made, and particular jokes about other people, about Serbs themselves. So it is a kind of unusual reaction. And it's hard to explain. Even today, a few days after the show, you can still find a number of comments in Serbian media, and people feel insulted. People feel like it's not fair, you know, like, and actually it's probably more reaction to the image of Serbia abroad than to actual show.
Well, along those lines, let's listen to what Serbian theater critic Ivan Mendenica told your own service.
The major issue here is the fact that there is this cultural stereotype related to Serbia and nobody is dealing with it. I think the show had some healing effects as it exposed the image of Serbia still present in most of the international community. All these unbalanced reactions and this wave of Serbian patriotism are speaking in favor of our inability to deal with the real picture of Serbia projected to the world. I do not want to make an excuse for inappropriate jokes, but the major problem is how we deal with them.
Gordana, as a Serb yourself, do you agree?
I definitely agree to Medenica's comment. I think it's a very wise comment, and I think he's opening a very important issue, and that's the issue how Serbs as a nation or how Serbia as a country is dealing with the past, and how and why everybody is all of a sudden disturbed that pretty innocent joke is made in a satirical program, you know, like.
So I do agree with Medenica that this show actually can have really a healing power, that it will make people think, and that I generally, I'm a person who believe in healing power of humor. And I think that the best way how we can deal with difficult questions is to make jokes.
How would you describe the Serb sense of humor? You referred to it a few minutes ago.
Actually, I have to mention that in former Yugoslavia, their most jokes were coming from Bosnia. And in all, we have our own stereotypes. And within this ex-Yugoslav stereotypes, actually, Bosnians were always the stupid ones, you know, like, and Slovenians were always the smart ones. And but it's jokes were told as well about Serbian character as well. So that is why it is so unusual that the country who actually produced powerful satiric program, a country who has great cartoonists, a country who was wonderful in producing a lot of humor, is all of a sudden insulted by some joke made in the U.S.
Do you think it was appropriate for the ambassador and the defense minister to respond to these ill-informed comments of a late-night TV talk show host in America?
No. I just think it's completely inappropriate, and it's just, you know, like because it really happens in authoritarian countries that the dictators are insulted with jokes made about them, you know, and they usually send their foreign ministers to react and so on. So for a democratic Serbia, and I do think that nowadays Serbia is a democratic country on its way to Europe, you know, and Serbia's intention is to join European Union in few years. No, you don't send your foreign minister to complain about jokes.
Do you think if they hadn't commented that this whole affair would have just been totally ignored and not even noticed in Serbia?
Definitely. And if there was no this political reaction, I even believe that at least half of Serbia would laugh over the U.S. joke.
Well, thank you very much, Gordana. If you want to read all of the entertaining comments on our original blog post, go to RFERL's website at RFERL.org.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they tried to make me go to rehab. I won't go.
I've always been interested in architecture, so a few weeks ago, when a friend sent me an Amazon gift certificate for my birthday, I used the money to buy a cool coffee table book that I've been hearing a lot about. It's called CCCP, Cosmic Communist Constructions Photographed, by Frederick Chauban. Chauban spent the better part of a decade traveling around Russia and the former Soviet Union, photographing the wild, futuristic, sci-fi-inspired buildings built in the 1970s and 1980s. I love the book and the often brutal beauty of these buildings, so I gave Mr. Chauban a call to talk more about his architectural quest. Welcome to the Blender, Frederick.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you explain a bit about your own background and how you got interested in this particular project?
Well, this is a long story. Well, I am the editor of a French magazine, and I've always been very much looking for unusual stuff that could in some way feed the content of the magazine. And for me, Eastern Europe, or let's say former Soviet Union, was a major discovery that I did at in the middle of the 90s. And it turned to me to be absolutely exotic. Just to let you know, I was born in Cambodia and brought up in Malaysia. I'm living in France. And in some way, what for others would be exoticism has never been for me such a thing. And an unexpected way, I mean, this northern and eastern part of Europe was for me an eye-opening experience in some way.
What would you say are some of the defining characteristics of this architecture? Is there something that all these buildings have in common?
I think that what they have in common, at least for me, was their extravagance in some way. This is what I noticed, I spotted at the very beginning. And they were, in some way, for me, totally anachronic. for me, it was very difficult to figure out exactly at what time or period they would belong, and what was the background influence that could explain the shapes of those buildings. And it's because those questions, I couldn't get any answer through archives or documents, at least documents that I could get, that I just started to try to find by myself the answers, practicing some kind of game in some way, which was, once again, very, very stimulating. I think that the interest of this architecture are those buildings which are quite rare. You have to keep in mind that they are displayed through a whole a continent. So there are not much of those. They are quite rare, once again. The interest of those buildings is that they are expressing, in some way, some kind of anthropological phenomena that were taking place during the period. They move me a lot because they are very, very personal, specific productions. And they belong to architects that are usually forgotten or at least anonymous. And there are very few of them that we still consider today. There is a couple of them that are still working and quite famous, but most of those architects, they just disappeared. And I like this idea of being facing a building that has that is an enigma in some way, that has no clear paternity, that is just out of time in some way. This is what is. And that what was fascinating for me when I did this whole work, and I'm not sure, I couldn't say that this architecture is a major architecture, but at least it shows that there was something that was going on in Soviet Union during those 20 last years. It also shows how history has to be written. It shows that we have been ignoring those 20 years. Now there's a regain of interest for them. And I hope that the book will in some way help to consider, I mean, bring more interest for those buildings. But the interesting fact is that, I mean, the book had to be done, I mean, to in some way bring interest about this production.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think your passion is coming through loud and clear.
But I mean, in some way, I have to tell you that, I mean, I have no personal fascination for the former Soviet Union. There's no nostalgia in this work. There is just the fact that what is fascinating is to realize that basically the trends, the intellectual main trends that were going through East and West were the same. So, I mean, East and West at the same time were worshipping the future. This is the very end of, how could I say, modernism in some way. And right now we're, I mean, totally frightened by the future. But at that time there was still a very optimistic perspective. And this, you can feel it through the architecture. This is why, I mean, you have those, let's say, between brackets, cosmic buildings related to the fantasies, I mean, science fiction fantasies, because there was this idea that the future would bring something better.
What were the influences for these architects? You know, I can't help but notice, thumbing through the magazine or through the book as I have right here in front of me, that a lot of the buildings seem like they're right out of a science fiction movie.
The shapes are crazy. They are just, at least for some of the buildings, they look like science fiction sets. This is what I thought. I felt the first time I was facing the Wedding Palace in Tbilisi in Georgia. It was just like, I thought it was coming out from Star Wars or something like this. And it was very, very unexpected. It didn't fit with the idea that I had about Soviet Union. And, you know, just to realize that suddenly things were much more complicated made it very, very exciting, much more complicated than what I thought.
If you'd like to see some of these buildings for yourself, just visit the multimedia section of our website, rferl.org, for an audio slideshow narrated by Shoban himself. That's all we have for this week. Thanks for turning on the blender. I'm Grant Podolko. Until next week, take care, everybody.